This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to iFanboys Talksplode with Mahmoud Asrar. Hey, this is Josh Flanagan with iFanboy.com. Talksplode is our creator interview show, and today we are talking to comic book artist Mahmoud Asrar. He has done a lot of comics. He's done X-Men. Most recently, you will have seen his work on Conan and Conan the King. He became known in the U.S. on Dynamo 5 with Jay Ferber from Image Comics, and he just keeps getting better all the time. He's talking to us from Austria, which is, I think, the farthest I've ever talked to anybody from. And let's get right to it. Hey, this is Josh Flanagan. I am here with Mahmoud Asrar.
Hello.
You are, I think you're the farthest away a person I have spoken to on my show. You're in Austria?
Yeah, Austria, Vienna. So wow. Central Europe.
It's, when I hear that, I was like, oh, are you surrounded by architectural beauty?
Pretty much, yeah. Everywhere.
Just all the time.
Or just overbearing.
Now, I've known you, you know, through comics and you know, social media for years and years and years, but it turns out when I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't actually know a heck of a lot about you. I first was aware of your work on Dynamo 5, correct?
Yeah. I guess that's my big break kind of thing.
That's your big break. So you grew up in Turkey?
Yes. The thing is, like, I'm actually not Turkish. It's a bit of a complicated story, but my mother is actually Austrian. My father was from Pakistan, and somehow they ended up in Turkey, and I was born there. So technically, everybody assumes I'm Turkish. I grew up, I could be considered Turkish in a way, I guess. But yeah.
And did you grow up in Turkey? Like, were you there for a while?
Yeah, I spent almost all my life there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how does one get into comic books starting in Turkey? I mean, there's Yıldıray Sinar is from Turkey as well.
Yeah,
right?
He's a good buddy.
I don't know of any others, though.
There are not too many that work internationally. But comics have always been a had an interest in Turkey, you know, like they're mostly in translated comics. There was some local stuff as well. So, yeah, I was lucky to have access to a lot of different types of comics growing up, you know, like things from like translated Italian comics, like the Westerns and everything, to Asterix, Tintin, translated Disney comics from Austria that my mom would bring, DC comics and things like that. So, like, I kind of grew up with those.
So they were just always sort of around?
Yeah.
Or like you always been involved with comics? As far back as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, like, I remember, like, it was, like, we had a nanny when we were pretty small for a bit. And, like, I remember, you know, vividly that we had a room, like, littered with comics on the floor, you know, like, we would rip them apart and stuff. You know, so, yeah, I mean, yeah, that was, like, when I was 4 years old or so. So, yeah, I grew up with that stuff.
So you were destined.
Some might say that, yeah.
So where does how do you get from being a kid who you know, has comics around and is used to reading them to being a person, you know, who, you know, falls in love with the medium to such an extent that that's what you want to do for a living?
I guess it's, I mean, connected to my love for drawing. I always loved it, you know, as a kid as well, like as far back as I can remember. I mean, it's, I guess it's a pretty common thing with artists that they grew up drawing and, you know, like continuing doing that. You know, people encouraged me, they said, you know, I was good at it and stuff, so like I believed it. I kept going on, and you know, like I, you know, like as time went on, you know, I guess my art direction went to comics and illustration and things like that, you know, comics, fantasy and everything. So I wanted to get an education in that, and you know, my love for comics and art, you know, combined, and I realized, you know, comics could be a profession. So, you know, so why not pursue that? Why not try to do that as a living? You know, I would, you know, I wouldn't love anything more than doing that, you know, so that's what I wanted to do.
When did you realize that it was a thing that you could do for a living?
I can't, you know, pinpoint it, but I mean, I remember, like, probably in Conan comics, you know, like, I would see the name of John Buscema, you know, like, the artist, you know, or penciler and things like that. And, you know, I was like, whoa, so there's this guy drawing this book, and, you know, like, I love his art, you know, I see him all these books, and then I would see his name in other books, and, like, I would see other people doing it. So, like, then I realized this, you know, that this was probably in my, you know, like, before I was 10. And then, you know, over time, you know, like in my teens, you know, like I started, you know, thinking, you know, maybe I could do this, you know, like, and then I met other people who were interested in doing this and things like that. So I said, why not other people aspire to do this? Why not me and stuff? So I guess, you know, that happened around my mid-teens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to, you and I are basically exactly the same age, so I'm trying to do the math, because I'm thinking if you had been born 10 years earlier and the internet had not been a thing, this would have been a lot more difficult.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the way it was already difficult. I think I got into it a bit late, you know, like if I had the internet and, you know, the access that I have with the internet to going into this business, you know, I think it would have been much more difficult, you know. Maybe, I mean, if I had internet before, maybe, you know, I could have started a bit earlier, but who knows, you know, you never know.
So what were you doing prior to that? Like, did you have a fallback option, a second thing? Did you go to school for art?
Yeah, I mean, I literally, you know, studied in university, you know, like I actually studied 2 years graphic design, which I thought, in my hometown, Ankara, where I felt, you know, like graphic design is probably the closest thing to making comics and illustration and things like that. So that's what I wanted to do. And then I felt this is not really going in the direction I want. This is too commercial and, you know, like too technical and stuff. And then, you know, like I had friends going to the animation department in another city in Turkey. And, you know, animation is pretty close to comics, you know, it's basically, you know, like comics in motion in a way, you know. So, and so I went there and, you know, like I studied there and, you know, I said, okay, if I can't do comics or whatever, you know, at least I could maybe, you know, work in multimedia animation and things like that. But the ultimate goal was always comics, and, you know, I literally didn't have a second plan, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're if you study graphic design, you're doing stuff like that. And were you making you doing like any indie comics or anything on your own, like learning how to do storytelling and the craft and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. In my teens, I started making comics on my own anyway. So like, I would do copy these some of my favorite stories, you know. Like, I would probably never finish them. It would be just a few pages. But, you know, at least I started doing that and, you know, like lettering and stuff like that. But a bit further on, when I was about 19, 20, with some friends, you know, including Yildiray Çınar, you know, like we started doing fanzines, you know, making our characters, telling our own stories. We would do everything. Of course, you know, like the lettering, everything, even stapling the books, you know. So I've been in the trenches in that sense. yeah, kind of learned the basics over there, and then, you know, it went on from there, you know, like with the internet, I started posting my work and things like that, you know.
Did you have a group of comic book friends? Was there like a scene of some kind? I mean, I don't know anything about it, so
I mean, there actually is, but the thing is, it's I always was a very introverted person, so like I never connected with much people, you know. Like I used to do skateboarding and stuff, and one day I, you know, met Yildiray because, you know, he was also a skater, and so that's we kind of connected over comics and skateboarding. And so, like, I was pretty surprised because he liked skateboarding, comics, and, you know, like, and he also drew, and, you know, like, that's also what he wanted to do. So he introduced me to other friends, you know, like, who were into comics and who also wanted to do comics. So we all got, you know, together. We started doing things together, you know, like, we all learned, and, you know, it was a good feeling, you know, that I'm not the only one, and, you know, like, there are people out there, you know, like, who are great at doing this and who are also enthusiastic at least as much as I am. So, you know, so that was great. Yeah, but it wasn't, I mean, a huge scene, and we couldn't learn much except from each other, maybe. But it was what we had, and, you know, we improvised, and I guess, you know, it worked out.
As you got sort of more serious about it, like, did you have comic shops, or were you getting into, like, certain types of comics? I know you'd mentioned John Buscema, but I probably wasn't working a heck of a lot by that time.
Yeah, I mean, in the 90s, it was pretty hard to find any comics in Turkey, especially original comics that we loved. The thing is, like, I mean, to find comics, we would do almost anything, you know. Like, I remember there was this American base in Ankara, you know, American soldier base, you know, army, military thingy. And a friend of mine from school, this was in probably early high school, and, you know, he was a Thai guy, and he actually became like an American scout, and he would go there, and he told me about like this bookstore over there that they would have all these new comics and stuff. So I heard this, so I said, okay, how can I be an American Boy Scout? So he introduced me to some people, so they actually accepted me in. So I started training to become an American Boy Scout. So I would go into the base, and, you know, like, I would do the training and everything. But, I mean, all this was for just going to that bookstore when I can, and, you know, like, look through the shelves and, you know, like, grab the stuff that I really enjoyed and stuff. So, I mean, that was, like, just one experience. I mean, you know, like, we would also go to secondhand bookstores, or, you know, like, find these comics everywhere. And later on, you know, like, there was no store in Turkey back then. But later on some opened, but I also would visit Austria, where I would find comics here. There was at least one comic shop that sold American comics. So those were my main, you know, access points, I guess.
And were you primarily, like, you were drawn to American comics more than, you know, French comics or, you know, whatever other stuff was going on in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I lean towards that the most. I mean, I was never close to anything, but I mean, like, I'd never said, no, I won't read manga or whatever, but I wasn't exposed to that stuff too much compared to these, maybe. So, and I had more interest in the American side of things.
It's really interesting that, I mean, this is like old people saying, or, you know, you had to really work for stuff like that back then. And I feel like that made it more value. Like, you don't have to work for stuff like that anymore. Like, if you want to see comics from anywhere in the world, you can see comics from anywhere in the world. But, like, then if you wanted to read comics, like, you had to make it your job. I mean, it wasn't as difficult for me here, but still, like, I had to work to get, you know, find stuff I wanted to read. It wasn't at all like now, and you had to do that three times as much. So I guess it's good you didn't have a backup plan.
I mean, it was difficult, but I guess it was part of the, you know, the charm, you know, like we would hear rumors about places, you know, like they would have, you know, like American comics at this, you know, store in this city or whatever, you know, like, so we would make trips to that city or whatever. So search for secondhand bookstores and things like that, you know, sift through the books, see if there's something we're interested in, you know.
It reminds me of, like, if you ever read, like, biographies of the Beatles or anybody from England in that time, and they were like ravenous to find, you know, American blues records, and like they would jump on a bus because they knew somebody knew a guitar chord that they hadn't learned before,
right?
You know,
right.
And stuff like that, because you know you had to work for it. And
yeah,
I mean, the story sounds kind of the same.
Like, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put myself in the same place as the Beatles or whatever, but
no,
I love
but that's that right? But that passion for the thing, like I want to. I want to get as much of this in my system, and it's you know, you've really got to go for it. And I think that when everything is so easy to get to, then it's not as valuable, I guess, in a way.
Exactly.
It's good and bad.
Yeah.
There's probably more people who want to be comic artists now than ever because they had access to them, but you know, like you had to go for it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, now looking back, like I remember, you know, even if we were on like vacation with the friends and stuff like that, you know, just for a summer vacation, you know, like we would go and, you know, like I would return with comics that I would find from somewhere, you know, like because I was always on the lookout. Even when, you know, like I visited Pakistan only once in my life. I think it was 1996 to visit family, you know. So we went there with my dad, and like, you know, every day I would, you know, like pester my dad, you know, saying, look, we're going to go to the city center. You know, you got to show me, like you told me there would be some places that would have comics and stuff. And you know, like he literally took me to the city to find comics, you know, like despite the limited time we had over there, you know, like just a few days, you know. So yeah, the hunger was there.
Any?
I actually did, you know,
two
single issues, floppies as some call them.
We didn't use that word back then.
Yeah, never.
that was like, I want to say that was like Warren Ellis in his forum in the early 2000s when I started hearing that word. I think they were just issues. Because we didn't even have, I mean, I wouldn't have, the comics were just comics. Like, I mean, like the word graphic novel was starting to show and people were using it, but, or like trade paperbacks. Anyway. So, let's say, did you come up through digital webbing? Because I think I saw that, like, that was the, like, there was a thing there. But that was the forum at the time that you would have used, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was, I mean, I guess, one of the most important places for me, you know, because, like, it was, like, literally a place for people who wanted to break into comics, you know, show their artwork, you know, connect people who create, you know, writers, artists, colorists, whatever. So like it was one of the main places where I would, you know, like display my work and, you know, share and, you know, try to get feedback and reach out to people. So it was very important for me. Actually, some
what
of my first publications were from them.
So before that came along, were you attempting to sort of get work doing comics, and how did that go, or how did you go about it?
This was actually, I think, in the early 2000s. So that was when after I graduated, and you know, I was actually working at this multimedia company making educational programs and games and stuff like that. So I was doing both of those together. So I mean, during that time, I already was doing comics fanzines, you know, since probably 1997 or so. So that was a thing. So it never stopped. It was very on and off, but still, it never stopped. So I mean, I started doing some local comics in Turkey. There were some publications. I guess during the early 2000s, I appeared in almost all kinds of local comic book publications. And
what would those
I
be?
Started,
would just would those be just indie books that were sold locally, or were there comic shows? Were there cons, like little ones, or
no shows at all?
No, I wouldn't think so.
I mean, we would barely get, you know, like any kind of events. Like, I mean, I heard, like, sometimes, very rarely, like the French, what do you call it, like cultural institute or something.
Oh,
would,
yeah, yeah.
Would invite just like a an artist just for like, you know, talking, you know, like a panel or something. I never saw any of those, but, you know, like occasionally stuff like that happened, but nothing like show or festival.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, so you're doing local stuff.
Right. Yeah,
where do you go from there?
So yeah, the local stuff. I mean, they paid not too well, but at least it was something, you know. So yeah. they were not indie, but I mean, it was such a. I mean, compared to the size of the country, what we sold was very little, so it wasn't a big thing, anyways. And then, you know, like through digital webbing and things like that, I started getting, you know, small gigs. You know, like I would get like a few pages there, a cover here. You know, like and then. I think that led to me working on this backup story for Image Comics. Like I think it was called Small Box. Sorry, Small Gods Outside the Box. So yeah, that was my first, I guess, image thingy. And then, you know, that kind of slowly led to Dynamo 5 in a couple of years.
How did that feel? Like to go from, you know, to getting a book published at Image. What was that like beforehand? Were you think you were up to it?
Well, I literally didn't think I was up to it, but and I was very, very, you know, surprised I was actually asked, you know, like because all this kind of thing was very, you know, being where I was and, you know, like this thing, you know, the American industry and, you know, comics, it was very surreal in a way for me, you know, like so breaking in was what I was aiming for, but, you know, like I wasn't in the realization that it would happen sometime soon or whatever. So, you know, when this kind of thing happened, you know, like I was really excited, very happy. I would tell about it everywhere and, you know, show it to everyone, you know, like, you know, all the copies I had, I would bring around. And my mom was very proud as well. She would embarrass me to everybody, you know, literally everybody she would show it to. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Funny. That was my next question. I was going to like, what did your parents think of sort of you wanting to do comics? Or was it a thing that you sort of did on the side and weren't talking about, you know, to them? Or were they supportive?
I mean, I grew up mostly with my mom and, you know, my father was a bit, you know, away from it. But the thing is, they never stood in my way, I guess, because my enthusiasm for this was too strong for them to stand in the way, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
Like they never were, you know, like closed-minded or whatever, you know, or, you know, like forceful in any way anyways. But still, they knew I wanted to do this, so, you know, they let it be in a way. And, you know, my mom was supportive, I would say. You know? She never...
That's great.
Yeah, I was lucky in that sense.
I mean, I know now, you know, you're a parent too, like, yeah. I understand that. If my kid was super into something, I'm thrilled. Like, I just...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, it's not watching YouTube, so you're really interested in the thing, go for it. that's probably that same feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we got all sorts of stuff at home, you know, like, he's showing interest to this? Okay, we got to get it.
Yeah. I'm starting to think maybe that we should make them hunt for it like we did for comics.
Yeah.
So you get this work published at Image. You know, where do you go from there? What do you think is going to happen next? What does anything for a little while? I guess Dynamo 5. But what happens in between there?
Yeah, Dynamo 5 was literally my biggest, you know, break, as I said, and like. I'm like, okay, this happened. I'm like a professional now, you know, like I'm earning money from this. I'm just like published internationally and it's Image Comics, you know, like I'm working with Jay Ferber, you know, like a renowned writer. And, you know, I was pretty excited about it. And then it felt like everything was happening too fast. Suddenly I get an email from CB Sadolsky. He says, like, if you want to do Marvel work, just let me know. And, you know, like we can get started whenever you want. So like, this happened, I think in 2007-ish. And, so yeah, while doing Dynamo 5, I started doing small jobs for Marvel, like covers and not covers, but like a few backup stuff or fill-in things, you know, little stuff. But it was, you know, like it was me doing Marvel, so I was pretty, you know, excited about that. Yeah. So yeah, it went on from there, and you know, like the thing is, like all this happened in such a gradual way, like it didn't like. You know, happen suddenly. So, but it was always incrementally rising, and you know, like I adjusted to that, and I guess it was always very, I don't know, balanced, I would say.
So how did you connect with Jay Ferber?
Jay, he reached out to me, I guess, from Digital Webbing. I mean, he saw me over there, and he emailed me, and he said, I'm planning something, doing a book like this, and I like your work, and would you want to do it with me, from the ground up, designing it and everything, owning it, whatever. So I immediately said yes, and I had nothing else going on anyway, so we
started. Did you know of his work?
To be honest, I never read anything of his, but I was aware of his work, like Noble Causes and some Marvel work, like Generation X, I think he did some. And, so I was aware of his stuff, so I was happy.
I mean, yeah, I would have been too. So is it somewhere around that point did you start doing comics full time?
Yeah, this is in 2007, I think. So I already, quit my job in multimedia around 2003 or maybe early 2004 or something like that.
Oh.
And then, in the meantime, I was doing some freelance stuff and, starting to, trying to work professionally in comics, small jobs here and there. And with the economy in Turkey, earning whatever from the U.S. was helping a lot, I would say. So, Dynamo 5 was all... become like a full-time professional, I guess.
Now that was, I don't know if it actually came out monthly or not, but it was, regular, steady, ongoing. I mean, I don't, how many issues did it run? It was around a while.
We went until 25, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't draw all of it, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, sort of making the switch from being a person who does little bits of things here and there as freelance to, full issue, ongoing, superhero narrative comics or whatever, like what was that change like? What did you have to learn? What was different about it?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is I always was interested in doing American superhero comics and, I guess I was geared towards that. So all the job offers and whatever that came to me were in a sense, already geared for that, so I didn't have a big problem adjusting. With Dynamo 5 and everything, it was already like a total superhero family thing. So, and all the Marvel stuff, which I was like a Marvel zombie growing up, so I was already familiar with most of the stuff, so it was not very difficult but very, very scary at first.
Sure. Did you, there's a lot of stuff where if you're largely self-taught and stuff is, coming from, the internet, did you, in terms of sort of the mechanics of sort of being a storyteller on a comic book page and professional, did you feel like you were prepared for it in that way? Or did you have to sort of learn as you were going, just how to be economical, all the stuff that you probably know now and take for granted, but you had to learn, how to be a professional comic book artist in there. Did that feel like it came easily?
I think so. I mean, I've never really struggled with telling stories, I feel. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know how, I can't be the judge of how successful I am at that, but...
You're good at that.
I appreciate it, really. The thing is, I never had a big issue with it. Mm-hmm. I would tell stories, for a long time on my own anyways, and it gradually grew, and I guess I learned on the way, and I was always interested in storytelling, watching movies and seeing how they do things and everything, reading books, comics, everything. So storytelling and telling stories has been a part of my life for a very long time anyways, and so I guess that wasn't very difficult. I guess
was there ever a point where you sort of realized what was going on behind a comic book page rather than just, cool drawings and sketches and things like that, but there was mechanics to it, that there was, there's a way to think about it differently?
The thing is, I kind of, because I had this animation background in the university, we learned a lot of technical things about making movies and telling stories. So, in comics, it is very similar. It is, uh-huh. I mean, the even the terminology and stuff like that. So, So the thing is, like, the stuff I'd learned at school, like, even if I didn't know it from before, now I realized how it is, technically, and how it works in a comic as well. So that was a good thing that I grabbed from my education, and I guess that helped with my storytelling in the books as well. And over time, I guess, I got more acquainted with that. So I never, I guess, had, I mean, still, I'm not probably very, what do you call it, proficient with maybe the terminology or whatever, but like, I guess I intuitively know how a story should go and what makes things flow better. And when you have this visual thing going on, I don't know how to say it, but you can intuit it in a way, like the way it looks aesthetically pleasing when you do certain things, and like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So
No, that's and I think that that's totally a valid way to be like, this is just part of it, it sort of evolved that way. Let me put it one more way that I'll. Was there a point when you started looking at comic book artists that and art that other people were doing sort of differently, sort of from a professional standpoint, to, wow, that looks cool, to, oh, wow, look what this guy's doing?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a constant thing. I mean, yeah, it never stops. I mean, I guess, I don't, pat myself on the back in many things, but one thing I pat myself on the back is my curiosity. So I am very curious about how people do things, how things work, and things like that. So, and I think it's a big part of me learning things. And so I really appreciate to see different things. So I try to understand how maybe some Japanese artists and does works out things in manga, or like how newcoming, like some artists in the in our field, what are they doing? So I try to look at that. I may not always be inspired by that, or maybe I don't want to grab it or whatever, but I always try to learn from those, and try to find out if there are things that I didn't realize before.
What you mentioned early on that you were like you were sort of John Buscema captured your attention.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Who were some other folks that you sort of like started noticing and you either like taking cues from or just really appreciated?
Yeah, I mean, John Buscema was my biggest influence, starting out, and still is, like, he's still one of my biggest influences.
Did you have How
So
to Draw Comics the Marvel Way?
I didn't have it until recently, actually.
Oh wow.
Until, yeah, but the thing is, like, we have copies of it. Like, a friend of mine had copies, photocopies of it, and like, I would borrow it sometimes and like try to see, how he made things and stuff. So like, that was hugely inspirational to me. So yeah, that John
So
Buscema, yeah.
you didn't have it directly, but you that's how, because a lot of people probably our age, maybe a little, like that was a book that everybody had,
Oh
and
yeah, it
I mean,
was.
I learned a ton from that.
Yeah, definitely. It was sort of almost like a Bible of sorts.
Yeah, 100%. No,
Yeah.
and I, like there was that bit where they'd show you like an okay drawing, and then they'd go to the next page, and it was just canted angle a little bit, and they moved the camera in,
Oh
and
yeah, I love
that
those pages, man. What I love is, like,
oh.
because it's John Buscema, you can tell that he had such a hard time making those panels boring.
It's true. I was like, that still looks pretty
Looks like,
good.
it does. Yeah, and so yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so who else? Like after Buscema, what kind of thing do you like now that you wouldn't have, when you were a kid?
That's hard to answer. Like, I don't want to give you like a political answer in a way, but I'm open to so many things that I enjoy all sorts of things. Like, I love Monsters, Barry Windsor-Smith, and then
Right.
the next moment I look at Vichat Atelier, the manga, and I really love that as well. And I don't know. So like, I'm open to all kinds of things,
Sure.
humorous cartoons and everything. And you can actually get inspired from all of these things, and you can, actually, absorb things from all of them. And I just love that. So, but I'm considering my official biggest influences in comics are, I guess, probably John Buscema, I would say. A bit later, John Byrne. Jim Lee was huge for me in the 90s. Later on, Adam Hughes, you know, Stuart Immonen, and now almost my peers, but like Coypel. So, yeah, these guys, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I just think how, you know, when I was a teenager, when I was younger, you know, I would see, I think the first time I saw the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man, and I thought, oh, I didn't know you could do it like that. And I was so into the, just how much was there on the page, all that ink and all those lines and things like that. And then at some point, I really got to appreciate, you know, like Darwin Cook is probably the best example of like a really economical person. Or you mentioned Eminent. I think Eminent is, he's like the best storyteller I've ever seen.
Oh,
like
yeah,
it's just, and he can do any style. Yeah. And I just find every once, you know, I'll be going through comics and I just find something that, and I don't even make comics. But you'll get something that inspires you, you know, to be like, oh, this is why I love this medium. And it'll be tiny things, you know, it'll be a panel transition or something like that. And
it's absolutely
one of the things I really loved about learning about comics. I think it's that same thing, that curiosity thing, like, why is this good? You know, that's the part that really excites me with it.
Yeah. Now that you say that, this is what I always feel whenever I look at Akira by Otomo. You know, like, mm-hmm. That thing, I've been looking at that book for so many years now, and even, you know, like, after all these years, like, I capture and, you know, like, find new things about that, you know, like,
yeah.
The things that, small motions, you know, sometimes the storytelling aspects, you know, the pacing, you know, the sizes of the panels, you know, like, technique, you know, that thing is like a genius thing, you know?
and it's
an, you know, like, unlimited source of inspiration, you know? You could always get something from that book, you know?
That's great. I think that's the thing that, for me, has really stuck with me for comics over the year, because the way that, you know, you have to work on them in a very, you know, specific and minute way, you know, from, you know, every little line you're creating, you're making it there. And I have to think about them in that way and talk about them that way. And then you can go back to things like that and you can see, you know, the things that a reader rightfully should probably never notice,
right.
You know, but once you're thinking about it, you do notice. And then all of a sudden you realize what separates, you know, the really good people from the amazing people. I hadn't read Daredevil Born Again when I was a kid, Mazzucchelli, and then we read it a couple of years ago for a show we had to do, and I was just, I mean, my eyes were wide the whole time. I was like, can't believe somebody's this good.
It's insane.
And nobody, you know, you would have bought a comic book issue in a store for 50 cents at the time, and you know, you read it, and it was fun, it was really good, you didn't know why, but then you can go back to it 35 years later and just see, oh, this is way above, and that to me is my favorite part about the medium.
At this point. One thing, like, I think in a way, what you mean is that, you know, even when you're not educated about this stuff, even when you're not, you know, like, trying to find how things work or, you know, like, delving deep into that, for example, when you're younger or whatever, you really enjoy something. And then, you know, like, when you grow up and then you look back at that, and now you realize why you enjoyed that. And, you know, like, for example, Bill Sienkiewicz, you know, like, when I was, you know, pretty young, you know, like, I would look at his work and it will look so outlandish and strange to me, you know, like, compared to most of the other stuff going on in comics. But it looked amazing and incredible. Like, how could somebody do this? You know, like, I would think. And then, you know, but I wouldn't understand it. You know, I would say, this is amazing, but I would just move on. You know, and now I look at it and appreciate it even more, I guess. I don't know.
I didn't even know it. I was like, I don't get that, and I don't know if I like it. I even felt that way about Jack Kirby. I felt that way about Jack Kirby for a long time until, like, I understood it. And then, you know, it was like peeling back, you know, a bunch of fuzz in front of it, and it came into stark relief. And I understand this now. And I love that feeling, too, because, you know, it's one of those things where if everybody says something's good and you don't get why, you're probably the one missing something.
I
think Sienkiewicz was like that for me. You know, I was a little kid or whatever. I didn't. And now, every once in a while, he'll do inks for somebody. Just out of nowhere, you'll just see his inks on a book. And it just makes it his. It comes alive.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, it's so good.
Amazing, yeah. I was one of those people about Jack Kirby, too. I got into him a bit late, you know. But the thing is, like, I mean, even when I wasn't a fan, you know, like, in a big way or whatever, I would find this work interesting and, you know, like, weirdly charming. although I was like, you know, I'm a Buscema guy. I want to see Buscema, even as, you know, Brother Sal Buscema, like, instead of this. But, and then, you know, it wasn't, you know, like, I wouldn't hate it or whatever, or, you know, but later I realized, you know, like, why it was good and
right.
why I was, you know, like, weirdly charmed by that, you know.
I mean, that, yeah, that's my favorite part about comics right now. I had gone to, I don't know, it was a museum, and they had Kirby pages, mm-hmm. like, as part of, it was a history of Jewish comic book artists, mm-hmm. I think, it was an exhibit, and I saw some of those pages up close, and like, it hit me. I was like, oh.
Right.
And then I, like, read a bunch of Jack Kirby books, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I see. He's the center of everything. I understand now. So getting back to the story, you get a casual email out of the blue from C.B. Cebulski.
Right.
That's what he did then. He found people around the world and was like, hey, if you want to do Marvel, that's cool. I mean, like, what did that feel like to get that email?
I mean, whenever something like that happens, and it still sometimes happens, I just run to my wife, you know, back then my girlfriend. I go tell her, look, this guy just wrote me, or this person just wrote me, you know, and, you know, like, they're saying this, you know, like, you know, and then, you know, I try to let it sink in and, you know, realize what's going on, and, you know, weigh the situation in a way. So
what did you tell CB? How did you respond to that? I bet you thought about it before you wrote back.
Yeah, I literally did. You know, like, I didn't want to jump in writing some weird, you know, fanboy stuff. I probably ended up doing some fanboyness, but the thing is, you know, I guess probably I tried to keep it short and, you know, like, respectful. Back then, when I was starting out, like, I was so respectful, extremely, you know, like, I would call people Mr. mm-hmm. Like Robert Kirkman, I would write Mr. Kirkman.
You obviously hadn't met him yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. it was funny. Yeah.
He's younger than us.
He literally is. I didn't know that back then, but still. You know, like, everybody doing this, like, I felt to me like they were doing it for, like, decades.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you read, you know, how does it work that you know, you write back to CB and you said, I'm certainly be interested in some stuff. You know, where does it go from there? Editors come to you and.
Yeah. I mean, I think, what happened was he connected me to Bill Roseman. He was, mm-hmm. I think the editor for most of the cosmic stuff in Marvel. So, you know, when all that, Guardians of the Galaxy stuff was kicking off. So I did, like, part of an annual for Nova, which was actually kind of, how do you call it, you know, like, fortuitous in a way, because it was like I was recreating a scene from a John Buscema story of Nova. So I was like, okay, this is no stress, whatever. So yeah, that was, I guess, my first Marvel gig. And then I did, like, a She-Hulk single issue, like something like an annual, which was with Peter David, who was back at that time, you know, like, literally my idol, you know, because he was... because of his run on Incredible Hulk. And so, yeah, that was extremely stressful. But, yeah, so I started getting these jobs. And, you know, like, it never stopped. I was pretty happy about that, you know. But the thing is, like, it was hitting me, hitting my schedule badly with Dynamo 5. So, like, I would have to take breaks, you know, like, or the schedule would suffer because of this. But thankfully, Jay was really, really understanding, you know, like, he was very kind and generous all the time. Mm-hmm. So we kind of made it work, yeah.
Was there a point where you felt like, oh, this is gonna work out? This is gonna be the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, okay, I'm doing Marvel stuff. I guess this will probably, you know, continue. You know? I mean, of course, it's been a while, so I don't probably know how I felt back then too well. But the thing is, I guess I said, you know, all right, I can, you know, survive, you know, doing this. Even if not this, you know, I could do smaller things, you know, and, you know, keep going. You know, I like this thing, you know, I guess it will go on. And, you know, I was a bit younger, you know, like, I felt a bit more invincible, I guess. So so there wasn't that much of a big of a worry, I would say.
And let me ask you this. I'll go back a little bit.
Yeah.
What did you want out of your career? You know, did you primarily want to be a penciler, you know, inker artist? Did you want to tell your own stories? You know, what was your goal? Was it to do X-Men, or was it, you know, what were you thinking you wanted?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. I mean, the thing is, like, looking back, I don't think I had, like, this ultimate goal, like the summit of a mountain or anything like this, you know? So, I mean, I just wanted to do the comics, you know, like, and, you know, whatever came my way, I would be grateful and happy to do it in a way. And I was lucky because I was doing the stuff that I liked, you know, superhero yeah. stuff and things like that. And so, yeah, I just wanted to draw comics. And, you know, I mostly did my own inking back then anyways. And so that's how it went. And, you know, like all these Marvel stuff came in. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing Marvel. What else can I ask for? You know, I'm doing, you know, books like, you know, like stuff for X-Men, you know, like Hulk and things like that. And, you know, I was pretty happy, you know, like I always aim to do better and improve myself. That was my main goal. Like, you know, just do better, you know, with the next project, with the next page, you know, and everything. So that was my ultimate goal. And, you know, like, I guess it kind of worked out. So like, things led to bigger things, which was something I couldn't complain about.
What about now? What is it? You know, you've done X-Men. You've done,
right.
You know, you've been to the top of that mountain. So, you know, where do you want to go from here?
Right. That's actually a good question, because I think this, at this point, it is. So, yeah, the thing is, like, I've been an exclusive artist for Marvel for over 9 years, I think, since 2013, I think. And my contract recently ended, and I decided not to resign because I want to do some creator-owned stuff. I want to go back to that, you know. That was something I always aimed for. It wasn't my, like, main goal or anything, but I wanted to get back into that, you know. In a way, leave something of me behind instead of, you know, like, being the hired gun in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was the goal. The thing is, as soon as my Marvel thing ended, you know, like, I got an offer from DC Comics. So I went back to DC. So now I'm going to do it. I'm doing a Batman book with Mark Waid. It recently got announced, and it's called Batman vs. Robin. And, you know, like, this is my first time professional doing Batman. I couldn't say no to this, and it's a really great story. And, you know, getting to work with Mark Waid again, it's thrilling. Yeah, so I'm doing that right now.
What did you work with? Did you work with him before on what?
Yeah, on a couple things. We did just a little bit of Hulk, just very short run together. And then I did all new, all different Avengers with him for a bit. Yeah.
Okay. He's one of those guys who I can't pigeonhole. I can't tell you, like, oh, he does this kind of story, he sounds like this, but what he does is almost always interesting.
Yeah.
And it's I mean, there's a bunch of, like, I can read a Brian Bendis book, and I can say, oh, that's a Brian Bendis book, you know. Uh-huh. And that's not a negative. It just is,
right.
You know, but Mark Waid can come into anything and I'll go, oh, that'll be interesting. You know, even if it's just Batman, Superman, but also sort of smaller, you know, whatever it is, a Doctor Strange or something like that.
Right. Exactly.
So that's a great partner to have.
Yeah. I can't complain. Definitely. He's amazing. The thing is, yeah, I guess, I don't know if this is the right word, but yeah, as you said, he's such a chameleon in a way that, you know, like, he can fit in any kind of book, like a small book, a bigger book, or, you know, like, independent, whatever. And it would be, you know, like, something, you know, interesting and good, you know. And so the thing is, like, on my side, from my experiences with working with him, is, like, although I can't, you know, like, as you said, pigeonhole his work or, you know, like, his style or whatever, but working with him always feels familiar and the same, you know, whatever the book is. Mm-hmm. There's at least that, you know, so that's an actually interesting thing to consider.
So if you're working with, you know, you work with quite a few veterans, I'm guessing you've worked with some new folks, you know, what's the difference between working with somebody who's got so much experience like Mark Waid or like Jason Aaron? You know, like, mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you create a shorthand with them or something like that, but how do they work with artists that maybe younger artists don't? Or younger writers, I mean.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. I would say guys like Wade and Iron, and they're like you get that they're more seasoned.
Right.
When you were working with them, when you're working with a bit more writer with a bit more green, at least, you know, you feel a bit more excitement and a bit more, you know, enthusiasm and wide-eyedness. The same thing I would feel in the way I was when I started out. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah,
totally. But you know, but a lot of that energy that comes from there isn't necessarily as efficient as somebody who's, you know, we got to do this job and we're gonna you know, put the appropriate amount of energy into it, but it's still gonna turn out good or maybe even better.
Yeah.
I mean, do you find like are scripts less detailed? They leave more decisions to you, or just more efficient? And I know everybody's scripts are different, and so it's a tricky question.
I guess less experienced writers, I feel, are, I mean, I guess it kind of shows the lack of experience with working with an artist, a visual person, because they're not sure of how they would, how much they should leave for the artist to do, or sometimes they can be too open, and sometimes they can be too detailed or whatever, you know, so... but it depends, you know. Sometimes it's just right too, you know. Like, everybody's different.
Mm-hmm. What do you like to get in terms of a script? Like, what sort of style do you find works best for you in terms of, you know, how they lay it out?
Yeah, I guess I kind of worked with all kinds of scripts, you know, like from really loose scripts, you know, like from literally like a summary of a script and me laying out the whole issue, or to Marvel style, to like full detailed script until, you know, like detailed until the camera shots and whatever. So like, I don't like the extremes, I would say. So I like a general middle point where, you know, like the artist, the writer defines what's going on. Panels are divided, you know, like all the, you know, what he said, dialogue is there and everything. But it's also open for interpretation. I like that, you know, like I don't want, you know, like, okay, this is a big panel and we see everybody in this angle or whatever, you know, like, so, or, you know, like, I don't like when it comes to, you know, like, they fight for 6 pages. So,
and so, you've gotten that?
I think I did. Yeah. Ugh. I don't know how many pages it was, but I think I got something like that. So, yeah, it was, yeah. It's not my ideal way of working, I guess.
Well, it's because you're doing all the work. let me go backwards a little bit now. You did a lot of Conan and it's occurring to me now, since we've been talking about John Buscema the whole time,
right?
Like, oh, this must have been special for you.
It was so special, literally. It was the biggest thing in my career, even more than I would think, you know, and even more than I would realize before getting the job, to be honest. The thing is, you know, when a few years back, when Marvel announced that they got the rights for publishing Conan and stuff, I was like, ah, oh, some lucky bastard is going to have to draw this and stuff. And I'm going to, you know, like, be jealous over here. And like, so that was the initial thought. A little time passes, and then, you know, like, I get an email, and it says, like, Marvel, you know, like, we want to call you. And like, so whenever there's like a call involved, I'm always stressed. I'm an anxious person anyways, and you know, like, I guess either this is not good or this is something interesting. So yeah, they call and they say, okay, so Jason Aaron is writing and he suggested he wants to work with you on Conan. And I look, I couldn't literally believe it. You know, like, I was like, oh, okay, that's awesome. And, you know, can I think about it? So, like, I didn't want to gush on the phone or whatever.
You had to play it cool.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I waited about a day or so. So I got back to them, you know, I said, yeah, sure, I got to get back to, you know, I got to do this, you know. And the thing with Conan is... of course, it was like a cool project to work on, you know, like going back to my roots and, you know, with the comics background that I had and everything. But the thing is, working on it, it was so liberating and so, I don't know, rejuvenating for me. And it revitalized my entire career and my approach to making comics. And I think it made me grow so much in such a short period of time. And
what is it about that world or that experience that you think, you know, is it the lack of sort of confines that you'd have in this Marvel universe or whatever? Is it that style of drawing
or story? I guess it's a mix of both things. I mean, the thing is, okay, as you said, there are no confines to it. So, like, you don't have much rules of designing things or whatever, you know, like cities, timelines, real people, whatever. It's all made up. And it's not tying into other things like, you know, like events or whatever, these characters or whatever. But it's also got some roots. So, like, it's got actually some, you know, like, background and, you know, some guidelines, you know, like, Conan is this guy with dark hair, long, you know, like, he's big, you know, muscular, and he's this kind of person. So there is some definition, but it's very open to interpretation. So that is so liberating, you know, like, I don't think anything can be more freeing to do, like, a sword and sorcery comic book. You know? So, yeah, it was very... I don't know. It felt it came easy to me. I don't know if it would be so for everyone.
It read that way. I mean, when I'm reading the book, I was like, "Oh, this is perfect!" Like this combination of writer and artist. It just you both were clearly in a zone you liked being in.
Right. I truly so appreciate across. That. Now, and yeah. I have to say, I mean, I get. I mean, Matt Wilson, the colorist on our book. You know, needs so much credit for this. You know, like, he's incredible, and he made this book, you know, like, as special as any of us did, you know, so yes. I think, yeah, he deserves all the credit, you know, so yeah, we had a great team, and I can't complain. Everybody was amazing through and through, you know, from start to finish, and I'm happy we got to do what we did.
Yeah, and then you get to go back, and was it the plan always to come back and do the last, is the King Conan the last story of it for now, anyway?
Yeah, it seems so. I guess, I'm not sure if what's the situation, but I think the American rights for Conan are not...
That's right.
Yeah, not with Marvel. So King Conan probably is the last thing. The thing is, like, we actually, you know, like, right after we did our, you know, Life and Death of Conan story in Conan the Barbarian, the 12-issue story, the plan was to move on to King Conan as a new title and do our, you know, like, second 6-issue story over there. But the pandemic hit. So yeah, the plans moved around, things changed, you know, like scheduling, everything, so it was postponed. So the project was almost lost for a while, so I really lost hope and actually felt very sad about that, because I was so prepared and so looking forward to it, but it didn't happen almost for, I don't know, like almost for 2 years, I guess.
Yeah, but it was 2 years. Meantime, it felt like 100 years.
Oh yeah, definitely. but I can't complain again, because I was very lucky during the pandemic. I got to work on amazing stuff with Marvel, you know, like working with Hickman and stuff, you know. So it was great.
So I have two more things I think I want to get to, and then we can get about our days. What is it like working with primarily, you know, American comic companies? You're in, you know, Turkey and then in Europe. How does that, because there's a global system where artists and writers are all over the world. Like, how does that work, you know, practically for you? Is it sort of difficult to work things out? Is that, you know, were you always a very good English speaker? Were, you know, there's all sorts of things that I would think would make it complicated.
Right. I don't know. I guess, I mean, it wasn't too difficult for me speaking English fairly well has always been an advantage for me, because until the end of high school, I learned English at school. So that was, I had that background, which helped me a lot. The internet, of course, was a great, you know, like, thing that I owe my career to. It wasn't that difficult. I guess the cultural differences were something I had to get used to. Like, I think American people are a bit more laid back, especially in their communication, at least in this field. It's not formal or anything by any means. You know? It was like, hey, dude, whatever. And I'm like, mister.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was really... So I got over that. So, like, I kind of got used to it. So there was that small, communication style difference at the beginning, but I got pretty used to things easily, I guess. I don't
Did
know.
you ever have a thing where you got a script and drew a thing and there was like a complete cultural misinterpretation of what the thing was supposed to be?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. But the thing is, I guess I didn't have a big problem like that. I'm trying to think back.
I mean, I'm sure it's happened with others. You seem to be fairly well placed for it, but I just there must have been some point where like that's not what that means at all.
Now thinking back about it, I mean, I didn't have any problem like that, but I remember noticing things like that in comics, like just making things up, like a South American artist probably working on an American comic, and something looks weird, like or the way they see it, maybe it looks a bit different or something. This is just a random example, of course, but yeah, I noticed that a couple times or so, but thankfully
Connor
I
and I
never
have
had
noticed
that.
that Connor and I have noticed that there are folks, there's been a weird thing where people draw people eating pizza and it's clear they've never eaten pizza. Like the slices, like it's just like no one holds pizza like that. There's a guy like holding the pizza box under their arm, upright. And I was like, that's not it's not a suitcase.
Oh yeah, that's pretty specific. Yeah, I think I
You
yeah.
watch. You watch out for it. You'll see it. It's a real thing, and somebody's
Okay.
got to be responsible.
I gotta be careful on my side as well now.
You ever need
Like
pizza
doing it
reference on
and
your
eating it
guy?
is different. Like drawing and eating it's
Sure.
just,
You're not wrong. So talk to me about the first time, and this may have been when I met you, but the first time you went to a big comic show in America.
The first time I actually went before I was a pro or anything. So this was back in 2002 when I was
Okay.
still working at the multimedia company I mentioned. So like I got my salary saved up and whatever. So I went to San Diego Comic Con. Like heard it was the biggest
Wow.
thing. Like all the like the pros are there, all the portfolio reviews go on there. So like I prepared for that. So I went there to show off my work. So that was my first biggest experience. That was so difficult for me, like total culture shock, like visiting the US for the first time, going to a convention, like meeting all these people, like artists,
Did you
like
go with like a portfolio? Were you looking for work or were you just
yeah,
going to see
totally.
it?
Yeah, I mean both. As a fan, like getting sketches and whatever, and also like to show off my portfolio. So like I prepared stuff, so I shopped that around. I tried to get as many people to look at my stuff as much as possible, so yeah, like for example, I tried DC. Like DC had like this thing, I guess it was every day they had like a panel portfolio review thing, so they would have a raffle, and like every day from the raffle they would get these people, the certain amount of people that they would look at the work of. So the first 3 days I don't get anything. So like I was unlucky. The fourth day, again a raffle, and again I don't get anything. The thing is, the fourth day they made a mistake with the raffle, so like some of the numbers were not included in the raffle. So they said, we're gonna do this again. So I'm like, okay, this is my chance. They put it again and they do it again. Again, nothing. So I'm like 4 days, and this is the last day of the show. So I'm like, I literally ran after the editor. I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, but I ran after him. I said, look, sir, I came from Turkey and like all the way from here, and like I've been trying every day. I couldn't look at this. So, like even if you just give me 5 minutes and whatever. So yeah, he was of course very kind, and like he looked at my work. We just sat down somewhere and had some good pointers and whatever. In general, and that back then, 2002, I had good responses from all these people, but didn't lead to anything serious to be open.
2002, because I went to San Diego 2000 through, well, to probably 11 or something like that. And like at that point too, it wasn't crazy yet.
Not,
It was like
no,
it was
nothing. No.
very, I mean, like it was big and it was impressive,
Yeah.
but comics were still the main thing. And there wasn't lines for everything all the
Yeah,
time. So that's probably
I
a good
mean,
time to be there.
I literally, it was much, I mean, less crowded than New York any of the recent years. And I mean, I think this would prove something. Like, I literally went to Adam Hughes and I got in line and I got a sketch from him for $50. This is like a joke. If I said that, like now, nobody would believe me.
In the first couple of years, you could just get sketches from people, hand them a book, and they'd sure all draw something in here, something beautiful, that's gone. Rightfully so. People shouldn't have to work for free. But there was something. I remember I went and I got a sketch from Steve Lieber. Mm-hmm. This is way back when, from Whiteout. I just had the book, and he did a thing, and he used like Whiteout on it, like actual Whiteout, and this is beautiful, amazing sketch that he just sort of did on the side while we chatted, and it felt all so much smaller and intimate. Like Will Eisner was there, walking around, and you're like, "That's Will Eisner." I didn't even know what that meant at the time, but I was like, "I feel like this is a big deal." If I loved movies, that would be Martin Scorsese walking around, which I do, but it's not the same now, which is kind of a bummer, but So yeah, you went at a good time, and then now you've probably been to some of the larger ones. It's a whole other experience, but you're behind the table.
Yeah, I've never went back to San Diego though. So
you've been to New York though, and
yeah, I go to New York every year.
New York is probably crazier because it's more full. It's like a ton of people in a smaller space. I didn't like the New York show, and I lived in New York, but it was just too, and it's way over on the. On the west side, like it wasn't near anything, and so you'd have to get all sweaty walking over there.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, I would fly in from Turkey.
I just did the boorish American thing. It's so difficult. You're like, I flew from Turkey, you asshole.
No, but I actually kind of relate to you as well. There are situations like that when. Happens here, in Vienna. So,
that's fine. All right. I think that's about all the time we have for now. I hope this is as much fun for you as it was for me. I always love these conversations.
Totally fun. Totally.
That's great.
Amazing. Awesome. Fantastic.
Thank you for making the time and working out the schedules. We both tried to figure out the time difference between us. Multiple checks.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate this. It was a great talk.
Cool. I look forward to the new book. And I always pick up stuff with your name on it, so not a problem.
Awesome. Hope you enjoy it.
Thanks. That wraps up another episode of iFanboys Talksplode. Semi-regular show. I want to thank Mahmood for taking the time to schedule that conversation. That took a little bit, but as always, it's just super fun to talk to these guys. And I love his work, and I think you should too. You can find him at Instagram and Twitter / his name. That's how to find it. You can go to ifanboy.com to see if there are more of these Talksplodes or any other shows or years and years of articles that we did. Thanks to the iFanboy patrons. They're the reason that there is an iFanboy Talksplode again. And thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon.